And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a good weekend or salvageable weekend. Probably know what the mood is for most. The weather reflects it. Gray, cold, and snowy. Darren McFarland, that's me. Willie Donick.
Good morning.
That's him. Chase McAbabe is on his way back from KC. He'll join us in a bit. In fact, I think he's set to land here in very shortly, unless...
Have we checked the schedule?
Unless it's like his adventures going to KC, and he is currently on a train or a bus. Remember when he goes, John Candy goes, ever ridden a bus before? Steve Martin, nope. Well, your new mood's not going to get any better.
But can we verify that the plane is in the air? Is it approaching?
Chase is pretty good about updating, and he was updating me everything on Friday. Considering I have no updates, I'm assuming that everything is fine.
Okay.
I'm assuming.
I might have to make some calls.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I haven't heard from him, so at least on the I have heard from him, just not on any airport situation or flight situation. So I'm going to take that as a good sign. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. We've got a loaded show again for you, as always. Chase and Teron Davenport will join us in the second hour in studio as we recap everything that happened at Arrowhead Stadium. You got a chance last night with D-Mace at Boomba's in your backyard in East Nashville to, reflect after the game last night.
Yeah, it was a great crowd at Boomba's. They had a lot of people there. We broke it down. I don't know how you felt about it, Darren. I came out of there thinking to myself, the Titans had no turnovers. They didn't have a rash of penalties. I thought they played very hard. They put themselves in a good position late in the first half. But ultimately, the Chiefs were just better. Patrick Mahomes was that good. He had to be great, and he was great. I thought it was a smart game plan. I know there's a lot of people saying, hey, they didn't get any pass rush, but you know, if you bring 5-6 people against him, I think the game goes differently. He just does not throw you the ball. I think they were just hoping that by dropping 7-8 guys back in the defensive backfield, that somewhere along the line, maybe he throws one that gets tipped in the cold weather, and you catch a break. And one of D-Mace's points is well taken. They only punted, three times or four times? Two out of the first three, it was because a really good receiver dropped the pass on third down. You know, they were almost perfect throughout the day, just like they were on seven straight drives against the Texans the week before. It's just the Titans would have had to play perfect, I think, to win. And so you look at little things like, you know, the play by Mahomes at the end of the half, obviously, that's one where the Titans probably feel like they should have got him down somewhere in there. They had chances to get him out of bounds. Instead, it becomes the highlight play that Chiefs fans are going to be talking about for years, right? There's always the two ways to look. Is it a great play by Mahomes? Yeah. But from the Titans' perspective, they probably were like, we had him.
I kind of felt like that was the dagger.
Held a good field goal. That was a huge dagger. Even hold him to a field goal, mm-hmm. You feel good going into the half.
You're tied. Yeah.
But at the half, you've done so many great things. You had a 17-play, 9-minute drive for a touchdown. You did exactly what you wanted to do, and you're down by 4. That had to be a little disheartening going into the locker room. And then the other swing play, as we talked about a lot, was 1st and 5, which becomes 2nd and 1. Then you get the hold,
which a lot of people are furious over. Wasn't that the play where the viral video of basically he had his hand in his back pocket and threw it the minute the ball was snapped?
From what I understand, he wasn't calling holding. A different referee called holding. He was throwing it for some illegal, what he thought was some illegal formation or something, which I guess they picked up. And somebody else threw the holding penalty. If you look, there was one of the Chiefs guys comes out of the pile and looks around for the flag, and he looks not at the ref that is shown in that video, but somebody who's out of the picture, And he's looking and he's like, okay, you got it. So I don't think that that was the issue. Now, whether that's holding or not, I mean, that's a it's away from where the ball's going. You know, could that have not been called? Well, I would have to say yes. Never know. But either way, that was a swing play, right? Just not being able to come back. You got the stop. You got the ball, still down four. And from then on out, I don't know if Derrick Henry touched the ball, right?
Three touches in the second half.
Well, two of them were on that drive, right? I think that was it after that. Because the next time they got the ball, they're down by 11.
Yeah. 7 yards in second half rushing.
Yeah, they took him out of the game. And as Floyd pointed out, the Chiefs had the ball for 19 minutes in the second half. They became, instead of the air raid where they score quick and, you know, you're looking around going, how did that happen? They scored in five plays. They milked the clock, which was really stunning. They kept the ball away from the Titans. They kept the ball away from Derrick Henry. And they cashed in, right? They had a long drive to go up 28-17 and take as much time off the clock. That was tough. Kept getting colder and colder, and like, man, it's not looking good here.
Bottom line is they lost to a better team.
They got beat. They just got beat.
The Chiefs are the better team. I mean, they still have to play it in 2 weeks. Today, do I have the opportunity to change my mind in the next 2 weeks because we're going to talk about it a lot? Sure, but today, you could not convince me the Chiefs are not going to win the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yeah.
As good as the 49ers were?
Yep.
You watched their game, didn't you?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. I still believe the Chiefs are going to win it. And I think the Lions won.
It was either a dead pick 'em or a one, depending on where you look.
I think the Chiefs are going
to
win.
Now, that's exciting to think about, though, where it's 50-50.
I think it's a great matchup.
It's a great matchup.
But I don't know how you stop the Chiefs. I really don't. I don't know how you stop that offense.
Well, first of all, a defensive line like the 49ers can be maybe.
Can you not make the case today? Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league?
I think you could make that
case.
You played like it.
I mean, all the greats that are there are all at the end, right? The Tom Brady's and the Drew Brees's of the world and Aaron Rodgers are more toward the end, the back end, or the end of their careers. Mahomes is at the beginning. I think he's probably the best quarterback in the league, and typically that's a great starting point for a franchise if you have the best quarterback in the league. And I think Kansas City has him. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo, honestly, San Francisco feels a lot like the Titans. Jimmy Garoppolo and Ryan Tannehill feel a lot the same, don't you think? San Francisco was winning by defense and running the football.
But boy, can they do that, though.
Well, yeah, but so have the Titans.
Amazing.
So have the Titans. Kansas City, you got to give them credit. I mean, you know, Frank Clark comes out, makes those comments, and it's like, really? That was dumb. And they backed it up. If you'd have told me that Derrick Henry was going to finish with 69 yards rushing on Friday, I would have said, and I'm going to tell you, Kansas City's in the Super Bowl. Like, that can't happen, and it's not going to happen. It did. I didn't think Kansas City could hold Derrick Henry. I didn't know anybody in the league could hold him to 69 yards rushing.
You know, but it was how they did it was interesting, because after the 17-play drive, he's got, just doing the math, something like 14 carries for 60 yards or 15 carries for 60 yards. You're thinking he's right on pace.
Oh, yeah.
He's chopping the tree down, right? Just like he always has. He's setting the table for the big second half. Who's run the ball better in the second half? Nobody.
Nobody.
That's when he usually breaks the big ones.
When he takes over.
At that point, I'm thinking, man, they are in perfect. They have set themselves up. This is as good as they could have hoped for, and they're going to have to just keep plowing through them in the second half. And then he didn't get the touches. Like, it's not, I don't think they stopped him as much. They did get some key stops, right? They got the three and out.
Mm-hmm.
When it became 17-14, they got the three and out. They stopped him twice, right? First and 10, give it to Henry. Second and 9, give it to Henry. They stopped him both times. And then third down, would they throw a little screen pass to Deion Lewis, I think, and all of a sudden, uh-oh, we have to kick it back to them with 2 minutes to go. And the Chiefs drive it all the way down and score from their own 14-yard line. That was a killer not to go into the half with the lead. But then after that, like we were talking about, he only got the ball three times after that. So is that the Chiefs stopping him? I guess. But I'd like to see if they had more opportunities to get the ball. Is that like the Chiefs kept the ball away from him?
Yeah. I thought it was critical for them to get a stop to come out of the second half, and they did.
They got it. They had to work hard. Tyreek Hill had to drop the ball.
And nothing. Yeah.
Yep. First and five. Second and one. Mm-hmm. At about the 40, you're like, this is promising.
But that's when the penalty
happened. That's when the holding happened.
Yeah. Changed everything. By the way, pick six, Patrick Mahomes, 294.
Bingo.
Did you go under 300?
Yes, I did.
Oh, man.
I had a big week. A big week.
Uh-oh, I did not. Did you take the under in Derrick Henry?
No.
Did you take Tannehill over?
I did.
Wow.
I got the Niners. I got Tannehill. I got under 300 yards.
Uh-oh.
I got field goal top shelf.
I did have field goal. I didn't top shelf it. I had field goal. I had Mahomes 300 to 399 top shelf, and he goes, he had 294 midway through the fourth. I was like, ah, 6 yards.
He's got this.
He's got this. Wrong. Didn't get it.
So it's not like he threw for 450, but he was still tremendously efficient, right? And the timely runs, not just the touchdown run, but the frustrating, we got him. Oh, he's got nothing. He's running away from his throwing side. Somebody get him. No, they can't get him. He gets right to the marker, gets out of bounds. Just demoralizing.
So good.
And then in the red zone, come up with a stop. Got to come up with a stop. Finds a way to get in there. A little end around or the running stats are a little deceiving, right? Damian Williams had 17 carries for 49 yards. You're like, that's fine. What's the big deal? But he had some key runs, right? He ran it in for a touchdown. He got a couple of first downs. He kept the chains moving. The Titans had the ball only 11 minutes in the second half after having it for 19 minutes in the first half.
Yep. Which is exactly what we talked about on Friday they needed to do.
They did it. The plan was working.
Yep.
And then it wasn't working.
And it was working until it wasn't working.
The Chiefs were just that good.
We'll come back. How do you feel today? What are your thoughts on the game? Love to talk to you. 737-1025, 615-737-1025. How do you feel today on this Monday? We'll weigh in and give our thoughts. You tell us yours. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 1025, The Game.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
Well, I guess everybody's in hibernation.
But if you try,
everybody's down in the dumps. Or you're just off today from work and you're just sitting around your PJs drinking hot chocolate or coffee. Maybe you've got a little bit of extra something in there. Something. And you just don't feel like talking.
The hair of the dog that bit you?
I don't know. Everybody just feels depressing. Shouldn't be depressed. It stinks. I would have liked to have talked about this for two more weeks. I mean, we're still going to, but it's just going to be about two other teams or another AFC team. But it would have been fun to see if they could finish this thing off, this magic carpet ride. Now, the big question for me is what I said at 9 o'clock on morning drive. They now have an opportunity. They have seized the moment. It's something we've been talking about on this show for a long time. It's time because the two of us know what it looks like in the heyday. We know what it looks like when the city is all about the Titans. We experienced it. We were covering them. We were right in the middle of it. And that's gone away. And it's been away for a while. But they now have brought people back, a good amount of people back. People are back on board, and now they've got the opportunity to seize the moment. They've got the opportunity to build upon what they built this year. And what's crazy, off a 9-7 season, it wasn't this, you know, special 14-2 regular season, number one seed type of deal. No, it was 9-7, squeaked into the playoffs, and you got all the way to the final game, you know, the conference championship game. But you're going to have to build on that. And you don't want it to look like Jacksonville 2 years ago, right? Their magical run to the AFC championship game. They had a very good regular season. They went all the way to the AFC Championship game and just about got into the Super Bowl. Could have easily been in the Super Bowl, and then they reverted back to Jacksonville the next year. That's what you can't do. You can't come back with an 8-8 season. That's and miss the playoffs. And so I'll be very curious.
Like you just used a great example. It's not a given, right? You have to go earn it.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm saying. That to me, that is the key for this franchise. This is the key for John Robinson and this franchise moving forward. John Robinson is going to have to roll up his sleeves this offseason and figure out a way for this team to get even better, because they have to take another step. And like I said, the next step to me, remember we had these themes with the Predators seasons after every, you know, when they would end, when they were getting to the playoffs. Okay, what's the thing? Okay, they need to, you know, they need to get home ice advantage. They were really good at home, so they need to get home ice advantage. And they need to make sure that they don't travel to California in back-to-back rounds. You know, there's all these themes that they need to do. And so the theme to me is, one, it'd be nice to win a division title for a change. And two, it sure would be nice to get a home playoff game, or games, plural, in this city. As we just saw in the championship games, in the conference championship games, home field meant something. It meant something.
It
meant something in the divisional rounds. Wild card was a little bit different. Wild card, you had three of the four road teams winning. Could have been 4-for-4. But the deeper you get in the playoffs, it was vitally important, as you saw, the home teams did better. So they're going to have to capitalize on this. They have the ability now to finally do what we've been talking about, actually get their fans back in the stadium, get their fans back and create an environment. They've been playing well at home. That really hasn't been the issue. But it's been so much of, you know, winning in spite of 25,000 Chiefs fans in the stadium, you know, 25,000 Patriots fans in the stadium, or Eagles fans. You know, we all know the usual suspects, Packers, Steelers, what have you. So now we didn't have those conversations in 99 and 2000 and 2001 and 2002. You know why? Because the games were sold out and they were basically Titans fans for the most part. You're never going to keep everybody out. But you know what I mean? We were never having a conversation about, holy cow, did you see how many fill-in-the-blank fans were in the stadium? So they've got that opportunity. There's a real fever pitch. There's going to be a real discussion. People are going to want to, they're going to be paying close attention to their moves, right? The draft, free agency, training camp. I suspect when we're out there, will be a great atmosphere. I think there'll probably be more people than we've seen out there in a long time, because people are going to be on board. Now it's going to be up to them to keep the thing going.
Well, I would hope so. That you know, if we're going to talk about the front office part of it, the marketing part of it, that has to be a huge goal. And there, you got to be out of excuses. Now, if you can't fill the stadium with your fans, I don't know what – you got to look in the mirror, right? But we've been saying this for a long time. I think it should have been better than it has been when you've been having winning seasons, not championship seasons, but they've been a solid team that's won at home the last few years, and they still have had the same exact problems they've always had. The Texans game, where the division was on the line, they didn't sell it out. Wasn't close.
Not even close.
Not even close. So it's time to roll up your sleeves and do something different, do something new, innovative, put your heads together, hire new people, spend some money to get the change you're looking for there. That's to the side. Then there's what John Robinson has to do. D-Mace and I got into this yesterday after the game on the show. You know, that would have been maybe, I'd have to go back and look through history, but the murderer's row it would have taken to get to the Super Bowl and then have to beat the 49ers, who are a great team. That would have been the most amazing run that any team has done as a sixth seed. Go on the road to the Patriots with their history, the Ravens with the season that they had, then to the Chiefs with a great player like Mahomes. That would have been incredible to go. So the next goal has to be set yourself up to where the path isn't as hard, right? That's the whole idea. It's not just that you play at home, but you don't get to play. You don't have to play as many good teams to get there. Obviously, if you play one less game, that's,
or get it right,
you get a bye. That's nice. But that's what they have to try to earn by taking the next step forward. Now, They've got some huge decisions to make, as we've been documenting all season long, right? And now with the emergence of Tannehill and Henry, it all starts there. But there's a long list of guys that they've got to address contractually. But they won't know how much they have to work with until they figure out Tannehill and Henry's situation. But what do they have going for them? A, they have identified some excellent role players, right? Those guys aren't that expensive, but they have gotten very meaningful contributions by the lower part of their roster. That is a tremendous feather in John Robinson and Mike Vrabel's caps, right? How they find ways for these guys to succeed. The Robersons, the Michael Pruitts, the Firksers, and on down the line. They also have the draft currency. They haven't traded a lot of... I think they have all of their draft picks, or close to all their... They have their first-round pick, right? They haven't traded a bunch of assets here. So they will be able to go into the draft.
It's been a while since we've talked about, what, the 28th pick in the draft? 29th or whatever it'll be? It'll be 28.
So that's where it is, right? If you get to this round, it doesn't matter that you were 9-7. There's no formula. With that,
So they were the
you're in the final four.
Seed.
You're the
so I think Green Bay will be 29. They'll be 28, and then obviously we know. Wait a minute. 29 and 30, right? And then San Francisco and Kansas City will be 31-32.
So 29.
So 29. Yeah.
So that's kind of a bummer. You're penalized by making a great run, but that's how it works.
That's how it works.
You made the final four.
Honestly, that's where you want to be drafting.
That's good. They'll be good players.
I don't think you want to be always drafting, you know, 5th and 8th and 10th.
But it's encouraging that they have shown.
Actually, the worst is 19. You got nothing to show for it, and you're drafting 19, right?
Yeah.
Which is what they were last year.
But think about this. They have shown the ability to find good players in the middle rounds, right? Who's out there yesterday? Monty Hooker makes the catch on the fake punt. Long came a long way, right? He went from he had a significant role by the end of the season. So they have a pretty good eye for these guys. I would think they can help themselves in this draft. I'm confident that they'll find good players in the draft. Now, is it going to be a superstar? I don't know. Can you get a guy like that at 29?
Sure.
Hopefully. Or if there's somebody you like, can you move up 10 slots? And identify the guy that's a perfect fit for you. They can sort of play that game because they don't have a lot of holes. They don't have a lot of glaring holes. They have some holes, but they're not glaring.
What would you address first?
That's a good pass
rush.
It would be nice to get another guy on the other side of Landry that can really get to the quarterback. That would be ideal if you could find that.
To your point,
is that guy there? 29?
Usually those guys are top five.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that guy for Ohio State may go number one.
Like, I like Landry.
Actually, I should say that he's not going number one. He may go number two or number three. But usually those special – I mean, look at Bosa, drafted right here in our backyard. Right? San Francisco, what was that? Was he the third pick, fourth pick?
Yeah, and this dawned on me last night. The Garoppolo injury that sidelined him for the whole year, the 49ers had to wait – but out of it, they had a bad year, and they got Bosa.
Yep.
So they had a feeling they had a pretty good team. They got the quarterback, and all of a sudden everything was derailed for a year. But then you come back the next year with the same guys you had, plus Bosa. Now you got something really special. So that was kind of the silver lining of a devastating injury to Garoppolo. So was it worth it? I would say, yeah, it's probably worth it. Because they're not going anywhere. They'll be pretty good next year, probably, right?
Well, I mean, it's the NFL, right?
The NFL,
I mean,
you can't tell. The Rams, I thought, would be pretty good this year.
I was going to say, did anybody predict the Rams not making the playoffs?
Yeah.
Everybody thought, you know, they got the genius, the boy wonder coach, and they looked to be pretty good, and they didn't make the playoffs. So I'll wait. I won't jump in that pool because I just know how this works.
But they look awesome right now.
Because,
let's go back to your question, though.
The difference is Kansas City and San Francisco. Nothing against Garoppolo. I'm just saying Garoppolo, to me, feels a lot more like Ryan Tannehill. San Francisco, there's nothing wrong with him, But he's not like Mahomes is elite.
Oh, there's nobody like
off
Mahomes.
The charts difference, right? Garoppolo is good. He's really good. But it's their defense and their running game which has really propelled them to where they are. And there's nothing wrong with that. It worked for the 49ers. It was working for the Titans until yesterday. It's the same mentality. But you're asking me to trust that guy who's good or really good. How about just really good? There's nothing wrong with really good. But he's not elite. He's not maybe the best in the league like Mahomes. Like, I trust, when you say the future is right, I trust that Kansas City can be back in this spot again, because when you have that guy, it just makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
You can mask more problems than a guy like the Garoppolos and the Tannehills of the world. You need a lot of things to come together.
But they've invested in Garoppolo, right? They're set. They know what he's going to cost. The difference with Mahomes is he's an absolute superstar that they haven't had to pay the next contract.
The Brinks truck to.
So that's what they will have to deal with.
Yeah. $40 million a year.
Yeah. But they will have Mahomes.
Right.
But they will not have as many
correct
people around him. That's why there was so much pressure. That was the big national story this past week of, boy, they better not screw this up because they're never going to have as good a team. They'll have a good team because they'll have Mahomes, but they're going to have to shed some players because he's going to start taking
typically
up a higher percentage of the cap.
Your best shot is in they're on those rookie deals, right? Russell Wilson. Wasn't Russell Wilson the back-to-back Super Bowls still on his rookie contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to pay Russell, and then guys start going away. That's how it works. Well, look, Richard Sherman is in the Super Bowl with San Francisco. Frank Clark is in the Super Bowl with Kansas City. Look at some of these guys from Seattle. They're on other teams, and that's what happens. And Kansas City will experience the same thing. But Seattle's still really good, but it does affect your team. They're not as good as they were with those teams because they were able to keep more guys together because you had your quarterback making much, much less. Now he makes, you know, what a premium elite quarterback makes, and that's what Kansas City's going to have to deal with when they have to pay him $40 million a year.
Right. So let's come back around to the question you asked in terms of what are the needs on the team. They're not glaring. I do think that the pass rush is one. You can always use another defensive back in the system that can help you, right? I would say maybe an infusion of youth in the offensive line. Maybe another member there somewhere. Maybe a second running back to help take the load off of Derrick Henry
comes. Let's do that on the other side.
So there's a little list that I think they're making. Okay. But when you say to these things to yourself, you're not saying, oh, my gosh, if they don't get this guy, they can't be good.
Well, it's what we were having three years ago.
They have good roster building. They've done a good job.
We kind of sat here 3 years ago and go, they can't fix everything in one
right,
offseason.
Yeah, they had too many things to fix.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think it's a lot of good things we can build off of. I think this is a big step in a great direction, you know, for this team and, you know, for this organization. I definitely want to say thank you to the fans, the city of Nashville, for the relentless support, you know, throughout the whole season, you know, throughout the playoffs, you know, throughout the whole season when, you know, things weren't looking as good, you know, for the fans sticking with us, the fans coming out to support us on road games, you know, through this whole playoff run, you know, making it very special for us, you know, and, you know, it's a lot of things we can build off of, and, you know, just want to say we appreciate
it. Sunday's a diamond.
Derrick Henry. What a season he had. NFL's leading rusher. And I thought for sure, 92 yards is all I needed to break the record for three postseason games in one single season. 92 yards to beat Terrell Davis. Didn't get it.
But you know what? Here's the other thing. There's some things that are forever going to be different now for Derrick Henry. Let's presume that he comes back in some fashion, right? That they get this deal done. They have to get it done, right? They can't come back next year with Derrick Henry not on the team.
No.
It's just, you can't. He's coming back as the AFC rushing or the NFL rushing leader next year. Here's what I really liked about this ascension, the King Henry ascension. I love how he represented himself during the run. He was very modest. He was very thankful to the fans, the teammates, just like you just heard right there. He had any number of interviews just like that, right? You walk out of there going, now that's a guy that I like being able to say he's on our team, right? If I'm a Titans fan, he's an easy guy to root for. I really like that about him. He's also become way, way more comfortable in the interview settings, don't you think? He's opened up some.
Yes.
You know, Teron did the really good piece on him, his background about his grandmother and all these things. I think we've learned a lot about Derrick Henry this year that we didn't know a whole lot about, even though he's been here for a while, right? He's a Heisman Trophy guy. He came in high profile. But I think he has done a great job with the media and the way he's opened up. I think he has become extremely likable and a guy that you can really get behind. I think that's worth something. And the whole line of, can they get people to now come to the games and fill the stadium and really get the fever going the way they should? That helps when you have a guy like that. You know, I don't think you're stressed worrying about what Derrick Henry's going to be doing. You know, he's going to represent the team very, very well. I like that.
So you're right. They're going to have to figure out. As I said this morning, I just hope it's a number that both sides can walk away and both sides feel good about. Or yeah. Is it one side going, we begrudgingly did it, you know, where it's like we did it, but let's just say I'm not exactly thrilled by the move, but they had no choice because they don't. John Robinson has no choice. The Titans have no choice. I just hope that they can come to a reasonable number. Like I said, that both sides can feel good about and walk away, shake hands, and get ready for next season. Now, you hit on something going into the break. There's no doubt they're going to have to find, and that's not that hard. Look, teams do it all the time around the league. You find that secondary running back, a guy that can give you a little spark, a guy that can give you something else. He's going to come on cheap. They're going to have to do that. Okay, what do you do with Jack Conklin? Does he walk?
It's a great question. I got the list in front of me of all the, not just free agents, but unrestricted free agents. One thing to have, you know, a handful of both, and they do have a couple of restricted ones. But remember, we were sitting out at the golf course in Brentwood at the Brant Snedeker. I forget what's the name of the league that the professional we had the birds.
Web.com?
The web.com tournament. The day that they decided
the birds.
Remember the birds?
Yeah.
The nest.
They loved our show.
They loved the show. We got to get them a meter, by the way. But they turned down the fifth-year option on Jack Conklin that day.
Yep.
Remember? And I was thinking, man, is that what you want? Now, Floyd Reese, when he arrived at the same tournament, he was like, had to do it. Didn't want to invest that much. It'll work itself out. But what has Conklin done? He's had a really good year. After some early struggles, by the end of the year, the offensive line was pretty good. Now, how replaceable is Jack Conklin if he walks? I'll be curious. I don't know. I mean, but John Robinson, I'm sure, thought about this possibility. But he could have had him locked in for one more year. He chose not to, so now he's unrestricted, Jack Conklin is. You also have Dennis Kelly, who's unrestricted. Dennis Kelly, the touchdown catching heaviest man ever to catch a touchdown pass now.
Weird stat.
But Dennis Kelly, as we have documented over the years, has been extremely valuable. He's 30. Conklin is 26. And I've heard some people say, well, you can just plug in Dennis Kelly. Well, he'll be 31, and then you won't have Dennis Kelly to be the Superman utility guy that can slide in anywhere and save the day when somebody goes down. So that's a big one. Like, we're going to be talking a lot about Tannehill and Henry.
The
but
thing that
the,
scares
the right
me about,
tackle is a very important position here.
You know what scares me the most about Dennis Kelly? Not his hands. Nope. That's not it at all. It's not his hair.
It's not the hair.
Nope. What scares me the most is I wonder if he's the backup quarterback. If he's the backup quarterback everybody's fallen in love with, right? And you love the backup quarterback in spot duty. You love the backup quarterback even if your quarterback has to miss a couple games, right? Three, four games, even three or four games. But it's when the backup quarterback becomes the full-time quarterback. And then all of a sudden, people don't love that backup quarterback the same way that they did when he's standing there on the sidelines and just filling in or spot duty. And that's what I worry about, because it's been great when Taylor Lewan is suspended for four games. It's been great when Nate Davis needs to come along, right? He's a rookie, or Jack Conklin is hurt, or what have you. I mean, we go down the list, right? He's just been the guy you plug and play, and it's been great. And he's done a fantastic job. Obviously, we'll always remember that touchdown that he had yesterday. Sure. But I kind of wonder if he's the backup quarterback. Like, yeah, do you want him? Do you really want him for six? Like, if Conklin goes and he's now he's the guy. Like, there's no, and like you said, then you've also lost that guy that you plug and play when something happens, and now he's the guy for 16 games or longer. Does it look the same? Does it look better? Or is there a chance it doesn't look the same or doesn't look better? That's what I worry about.
That's a very important position. That's a very important position. I would love to have Dennis Kelly back in the same role. If in my perfect scenario, and this is where they have to operate now, is that it's not going to be perfect. Right, they have too many good players. That's a good problem. That happens to good teams. So they're going to have to make some tough choices here. But I'm very curious, because we haven't even talked about Logan Ryan. There's another one who, when you look at what they got out of this defense, which was pretty gritty. You know, it's a good defense. It's not a great defense, but they came up big in the playoffs. They played some good games, and they have a nucleus. I am really excited about Jeffrey Simmons starting the year next year, having these games under his belt, having the ACL injury behind him. I think he could really be a difference maker. And you put him next to Casey, and you got Daquan Jones. I love the interior of that defensive line. Then you got Rashawn Evans, who came to take a huge step forward this year. You got Jayon Brown. You got Byard in the middle. But then you start looking, who's the other key guy? I think you look at Kenny Vaccaro and Logan Ryan were very important veteran guys on there.
No question.
So what do you do about Ryan? Because that's a price tag too. Like, Conklin's a price tag. Ryan's a price tag.
Yeah.
Do you have enough left over when you get the two big pieces locked in to address that? These are tough.
What do you do with Delanie Walker?
Great question. How about Wesley Woodyard? Would you like to have him back at a bargain price? I put those two in kind of the same category.
Those are great team guys
that I would love back, but I don't have much money.
They have to be in the bargain bin.
Yes.
They have to be.
It's like, guys, I want to have you back, but I don't have much money for you. You know?
You can't buy those at Macy's.
Floyd is a great guy to talk about these guys. He had guys like
those
this.
Those guys have to be on the racks at TJ Maxx. They can't be on the racks at Macy's. They can't.
No.
Sorry. No. Nothing to get. It doesn't mean that you don't want them. But they have to be on the TJ Maxx rack. They cannot be at Macy's. That's the reality.
I'll give you another one that can't be in the priority basket, but he's in the basket. Tajae Sharpe. Wouldn't you like to have him as your fourth guy? But he might be sitting there with his agent going, you know, I think I could be a number two or a number three on another team, on the right team. Maybe somebody will pay me more to go elsewhere. So that might be what his choice ends up being. Because Humphreys is under contract, he's coming back. And Tajae Sharpe didn't have much of a role yesterday. But Sharpe made some key catches over the course of the season.
Same deal, though. He's got to be at the right store.
In the bargain. Yeah.
He cannot be in the expense. He cannot be in Green Hills. He just can't. Sorry. All right, we'll come back. We lost sad news. We learned of losing a dear friend yesterday, and we'll wrap up the first hour of Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, that they're not front runners, that, you know, when people, you know, have opinions and comments and games don't go the way we want them, they don't pout, they don't disappear, you know, because it's easy to listen to the noise sometimes that gets created in media and fans, outside influences. They stayed the course. They're mentally and physically tough. And again, that's part of the reason why I'm proud to coach them.
Mike Vrabel will talk today at 2:30. you'll be able to hear that press conference live.
And just like the Derrick Henry soundbite we just heard, think about where Derrick Henry has come with his profile, the way he carries himself. Big thumbs up. I would also say, is the term street cred? I don't know. But Mike Vrabel's profile as a head coach, the way that he showcased his team, the way he came across in the playoffs, and the stretch run where they got into the playoffs, his growth curve as a head coach has grown big time. Don't you think?
I mean,
he has grown up a lot.
When we left Cool Springs Wines and Spirits on Friday, I was on a Kansas City radio station on the drive home, and Mike Vrabel was brought up, and I said, look, if there's anybody that has been critical of Mike Vrabel, it's me. And I said, I think he's deserved it, but I've also seen this growth chart, and he's changed for the better. And the stuff that we used to talk about on the show early on, and this is just year two, I said, it feels like it's year five, but it's just year two. I said, really, we haven't talked about it in a while. I think there were some things in the first half of the season we did talk about, and you wondered, is it going to get better? And I said, one of the things that I was critical about was just I wanted him to take his player hat off and be a head coach. And I just think we've watched him grow. We've watched him grow for the better. Is he perfect? No, but there's no coach that's perfect. Andy Reid has had tons of success, but you can pick apart Andy Reid if you want to.
Sure. His record coming into the game yesterday in the playoffs was 13-14. So that you can look at that so many different ways, right?
And 1-5 in conference championship games.
I mean, he's brought his team there so many times. You got to give him credit for that. But he has, you would think maybe one or two other times he's broken through, so it was well deserved.
But to answer your question, he's really grown. Those discussion pieces really have, dare I say, kind of gone away. I mean, there's always going to be something. That's just the nature of the beast with a coach. Like, for example, late in the game, I didn't understand why they didn't go for two. And what difference does it make if you're down 11 or if you're down 12? Why wouldn't you cut it to 10? You know, you need down 11, you need two touchdowns. I mean, down 10, you need a touchdown and a field goal. I didn't really understand that. Did I think that was a big discussion piece for today? No. No, but I mean, I questioned it. And I was like, I didn't really understand why don't you go for two in the fourth quarter in that spot. But, I mean, those are compared to some of the things that we were talking about early on, especially when he first got here. You know, he's worried about the signs in the building and just kind of going after the media. I just felt like it was a lot of push. And I think, as I said to the Kansas City radio station, their afternoon drive show, I said, I think he's finally realized, like, not everybody's out to get him. I think in New England and as a player, you're guarded.
Yeah.
And you think everybody's out to you, especially like a guy like him. But I think that's just how he is. But I think he's let his guard down. I think he's trust this market, the media, everything a little bit more and realize not everybody's out to get him. And so we've seen that growth chart. I said overall, I've been really impressed that there's been times when I thought, man, this thing is really rocky. Like, I don't know where this is going and where it is today. He's done a really good job of changing that image.
He I think, has had to get used to being under the microscope as a head coach, right, where everybody is always going to be combing through every little thing that you do, whether you want to go for it on fourth and one or should you go for it or should you challenge this. That's just part of the job, right? But I think what has shown through are all the things that I've always admired really since he got here, because all the things he has been preaching, he has created a good identity for his team. That group has played as a team, right? He has always said, I need the right 45 guys, and he's got a role for every guy that goes out there. That is admirable, right? Not every team you can say that about. And so I think he milked just about all he could out of this group. And at the beginning of the year, his star left tackle is suspended for four games. The guard that he drafts to play right guard is nowhere to be found.
He's not ready.
The term milk carton was used. Like, mm-hmm. Where's Nate Davis? Is he even there?
Yep.
They were in disarray, but he held him, hung him in there. Then he had to make the quarterback change, a tough call. And so hats off. Like, he's really grown up in a short period of time, and now I think they're going to come into next year with a completely different profile from here in this market and from the NFL market, right? They're going to be viewed differently than they were coming into last year or the year before.
No question. But training camp's going to have a lot of the same feel as it did after they came off the playoffs. Remember when we had every player and coach sit down with us and we said, okay, now how do you take the next step? Because
expectations will be higher.
Expectations are going
to
be higher.
Yesterday he says, I don't shy away from that. That's what they hired us to do. Let's go.
So you're going to have expectations. Yeah. People are going to expect more. And so how do you handle that as a team? And we know how they handled it a couple years ago, different regime. But I guess that was coming off. Remember that? What was the season before? How many wins did they have? It was really bad because it was like, remember we kept saying, it's easy to go from three wins to nine wins. Like that's much. Now, how do you go from nine to double-digit wins, right?
Yep.
That one's the tougher climb in the NFL. So it was a little bit different set of circumstances. And I did say in that interview, I said, look, whatever you think of Mike Vrabel, you can't. What is undeniable is his team has bought in. They have bought into what he's preaching and what he's bringing and his staff. So they're all in on what's going on over there at St. Thomas Sports Park. Speaking of that, we'll do that later today. I brought up going into the break that we lost a dear friend, a guy that we dealt with for a long time, a guy that people in this market, if you've been here for a while, you read the work of David Clymer, legendary sports columnist for the Tennessean, and a guy that did it for a long time, and a guy that we used to have on weekly for an hour on the radio with us. And so we have a lot of fond memories of dealing with David Clymer and a lot of fun moments on the air, off the air, and I was incredibly sad to learn of him passing away during the Titans game. It like changed my mood of the game. In fact, at that point, I was in a really good mood, and it just kind of was down in the dumps after learning that. And quite honestly, the most embarrassing thing of the whole thing, Willie, is I didn't even realize, and I'm embarrassed to even say it, but it's just a fact. I didn't know he was even battling pancreatic cancer. And I know David's a reserved guy. Yeah. David was not very public.
If it makes you feel better, I didn't know either.
I did not know he was dealing with pancreatic
cancer.
But
it doesn't surprise me. He was the kind of guy who would not call attention to himself.
That's
he
so
was not
David.
He was not a look at me, a woe is me. I mean, he just very classy and just a pro, right? He had his vision of what his job was as a columnist. And I always respected that. You know, he would take the heat.
He was not afraid to ruffle feathers.
Yeah.
He was not.
And he would always have the same reaction, whether it was the Predators or the Titans or Tennessee or Vanderbilt, that's just my
job. I thought he tried to do it in a fair way.
Absolutely.
That's the difference.
Yeah, not unfair.
Some people try to do it to get attention. He wasn't trying to do it to get attention. He was trying to do his job. But I thought he was also, even if it was a tough topic, because remember, he's a columnist. He's there to get a reaction out of you. And he would write things that would get a reaction, for sure. But I think he tried to do it in a fair way.
So I'll always...
Well, I know he tried to do it in a fair way.
Oh, yeah. I'll always cherish the memories. And Darren, you were on many of these. I don't remember exactly what day he came on, but it was the once a week for an hour. We always look forward to those conversations. And it was a very special thing that is no longer really the same because of the evolution of newspapers in general, but the synergy or the inner splicing, you bring the world of newspaper columnists with sports talk show. It was such a great thing back in the 90s, the 2000s, when we started doing this kind of stuff. It's not the same as it was because the business evolves, right? Both businesses. Sports talk's different than it used to be. Newspapers are way different than they used to be. But that was always an exciting thing. You take a column that a David Clymer had written, and now we bounce off, okay, here's what you wrote. What's your reaction? And then what are the listeners' reactions? We had so many great conversations about stuff like that. You know, and
you know what's a memory that I was trying to just think of some of the, I mean, we had, so, like I said, so many fun times on the air, but even fun times off the air. One of the things I remember on the air that then went to off the air because it was so much fun, was he not there at Sam's in Hillsborough Village with us when Michael McDonald called into the show? Was it
yes,
not during David Clymer?
Yes, he was. He was. I didn't think about that until
right?
you said that. I was wondering why you were asking me about
yes.
Hillsborough Village.
Because I thought for sure that was during David's our segment with us. And
yeah.
because
I think
David was looking at me and you,
yeah.
and we're all three looking at each other. George is hook, line, and sinker. He's like, well.
Yeah, I think he was aware
Michael
maybe before
McDonald is
we
calling
were.
Into my show, and he knows
yeah.
me. He was all in.
Oh, man.
And we're sitting there, the three of us are looking. I don't think this is Michael McDonald.
Well, just for people that have no idea what we're talking about, he was just one of those days that he was on with us, and we're having our conversation. We get a call from somebody who says he's Michael McDonald. He has heard our host, George Plaster. He loves the Doobie Brothers. He loves Michael McDonald.
Yep. And he had just played, right?
He had played, and supposedly, I don't know if that was, you know, these musicians come in, they have a residence sometimes in Nashville. You're like, oh, well, maybe he does. Maybe he is here. And so he's going on, and as the conversation keeps going, and George is he's biting.
Mm-hmm.
He's buying in. We become a little skeptical, but the look on David's face, I think, told all kind of.
Well, then he started singing, and we were like, no. Stop.
Well, as soon as he started singing, that's
like,
when
no.
he knew we knew we had been had. But I think a few sentences before, he was like, I don't think so. It's like he was giving us the shake, the eyebrow raise, like, this is
not McDonald.
It was a guy just prank calling.
Yeah.
But it was the guy was pretty good.
He was. He did a great job. But the three of us were like, I don't think so. But George was all in.
He started singing Taking It to the Streets.
Yeah.
And it was clearly not Michael McDonald at that point.
No, we knew then. The gig was up.
But
so
we'll miss David.
We're thinking about Rebecca
yeah.
and the Clymers. And I just, man, just sad, sad, sad to hear. Too early for David Clymer, who was like I said, a legendary sports columnist in this town, won a lot of awards for his work, and he did it for like four decades, and he was really, really good at it. So, great memories.
Yeah, great memories. We'll miss him.
Great. We will definitely miss him. All right, we'll come back. Hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase next.